passport, check. Euros, check. Train ticket, check.
Oh no, I forgot the Flight Free podcast.
Check in with the Flight Free podcast. Imagine where we can take you. Don't forget to carry us in your pocket for destination inspiration.
Hello, and welcome to the Flight Free podcast. I'm Evie, and in this episode, we're going to be celebrating Earth Day, the annual festival of our wonderful planet, which takes place on April 22nd each year. The theme this year is Invest in Our Planet, so we've invited a couple of entrepreneurs to talk to us about how economic prosperity can go hand in hand with having a livable planet. We'll be hearing from Tessa Clark, the co-founder and CEO of Olio, a company tackling the problem of food waste, and May Al-Karouni, who is the founder of Globechain, an award-winning British reuse marketplace. Earth Day started in 1970 when a United States senator from Wisconsin organized a national demonstration to raise awareness about environmental issues. Since then, the celebrations have grown, and according to the Earth Day Network, more than 1 billion people are involved in Earth Day activities each year. This year's theme of Invest in Our Planet aims to highlight the collective responsibility of governments, businesses, and individuals to help us transition to a fair and prosperous green economy. Before we get on with the questions, here's this month's Flight Free Fact.
Flight Free Fact.
There are lots of people who say that we can't invest in our economy at the same time as investing in our planet. But research from climate charity Possible shows that investing in green transport means that for every 10 jobs lost in aviation, 30 jobs can be found elsewhere. These areas include low emission travel, domestic tourism, and research and development. This is an amazing fact, and it really challenges the narrative about economic growth relying on fossil fuels. The stark truth is, if we don't make green investments now, we will end up paying more later to deal with the effects of climate change. Investing in our planet makes sense for us as well as for the economy. Now it's time to hear from our first guest, Tessa Clark. Hello, Tessa, and welcome to the Flight Free podcast. Olio is such a wonderful idea. Could you explain to us what it is all about and how you came to set it up?
Yeah, so Olio is an app that exists to tackle the enormous problem of waste in our homes and local communities. And the light bulb idea, or moment, I guess, if you like, came 7 years ago when I was living and working in Switzerland and moving back to the UK. And on moving day, the removal men told me I had to throw away all of our uneaten food. Now, I'm a farmer's daughter, so I know through my kind of a misspent childhood just how much hard work goes into producing food. And as a result of that, I was brought up to think that throwing away food was sort of a sin or a crime. So I wasn't prepared to throw the food in the bin and instead tried to find someone to give my food to. So I kind of set out onto the streets. And unfortunately, the lady who was normally always in her one spot wasn't there that day. And so I felt very defeated by the fact that I'd kind of gone to all this effort to try and share this food and had failed, but decided to kind of go back to my apartment. And when the packing men weren't looking, I smuggled the non-perishable foods into the bottom of my packing boxes. And that was the moment when I just thought, this is crazy, the lengths I'm going to avoid throwing away this food on a very, very stressful day. Why isn't there a simple app where I can just advertise my food and whoever wants to pick it up can pop around and pick it up?
So for anyone listening, how can they get involved with Olio?
Yeah, so we've kind of gone from that idea to now a global community of almost 6 million people. And the app is free to download, free to use. You can get it on Google Play or the App Store. And you can also use it via our website if you'd like as well. And how it works is really, really simple. So you just snap a photo of any food or other household items you have that you no longer want to add it to Olio. And then neighbours living nearby get an alert. They can browse the listings, request what they want, and pop around and pick it up. And to date, we've had over 45 million portions of food saved, over 3 million other household items, and that has had an environmental impact equivalent to taking 135 million car miles off the road. And we've also saved 6.6 billion litres of water. So Olio just really kind of goes to show that if we all take lots of small steps and small actions, then together we can have a massive positive impact.
Yeah, that's a really key part of individual action and behaviour change. And that's exactly what we're trying to achieve with the Flight Free Pledge. The aim is to inspire lots of people to take action. And then that all really adds up to make a big difference, just like the impact that you're having with Olio. So given that the app is free for consumers, how do you make this work as a business?
Yeah, so we decided from day one, we were very clear that we wanted Olio to be a business, not a charity. And so how we generate revenues is thanks to something called our Food Waste Heroes program. So this is a service that we provide to businesses, so supermarkets or quick service restaurants, corporate canteens, etc., that enables them to have zero food waste locations. So how it works is we recruit and then train online volunteers from the Olio community. And once they're trained up as a food waste hero, so that means that they kind of really understand how our food safety management system works, they can then claim a collection slot at a local business. So Tesco, for example, is our largest client. Mm-hmm. And if you have selected, say, a Thursday night collection at 8 p.m., you'll pop out of your house across the road, you'll go to the Tesco store, you'll pick up all of their unsold food, you'll take it home, you'll add it to the app. Within minutes, your neighbor's requesting it, and minutes later, they're popping around and picking it up. So that takes that food from having been considered a waste stream in the store to instead, on average, between 1 and 2 hours later, being fully redistributed into multiple homes. And at the moment, those businesses are paying a waste contractor to take that food away, and instead, they're now paying us to make sure it's eaten.
And then the messaging around the app, the community is really great, and there's a lot of focus on how you're helping your neighbour, and then it just so happens that you're fighting climate change at the same time. Do you think that that's what it takes for people to take climate action, to sort of see it as helping one another as opposed to this sort of vague planet?
Yeah, I definitely think that the planet just does feel a bit too distant for everybody. And sort of for better or for worse, I think human beings are often kind of very selfishly motivated. And so what we find is that people use Olio because it feels good, because they enjoy using it. And a big part of that is the community angle. It feels really good to give something of value that you don't want to a neighbor living nearby who would like it. But yeah, I mean, I've said we're sort of selfishly motivated. We use Olio because we enjoy it, but obviously that then is having massively positive impact both on our local communities and on the planet. And another sort of core reason why people use Olio is just because they hate waste. And I think that's just something that's very integral to us as human beings. It's just very instinctive to dislike waste. And the reason why we're generating waste nowadays is actually because we're no longer connected with our local community. We no longer have anyone to give our surplus stuff to. And Olio is directly tackling that. And so people kind of join us because they hate waste, but they keep using Olio because it's really fun to connect with a neighbour and feel like you're sort of empowered and making a difference.
That's really brilliant. We find that with Flight Free UK too. We want people to feel empowered to make a difference, but it's not just about feeling good about reducing emissions. It's about focusing on the positive aspects of traveling in other ways. So it's about helping the consumer to feel good about the decisions they're making because they've had an amazing travel experience. So why do you think it's important that we invest in our planet? And how can we do this, A, as consumers, and B, as business leaders?
In terms of just the pace and the urgency, that I find that really quite upsetting, the lack of pace and urgency that we have seen to date. But what gives me hope is kind of, you know, the IPCC reports, which can be very make for depressing reading, but they are kind of sounding the alarm bell very effectively. And there is a real sense that there's growing momentum in this space and we are reaching a tipping point. The message at Olio that we have for people is that not to forget the role that they can play as an individual. I think at the moment it's really easy to get very depressed about the state of the world, to feel a bit overwhelmed, to feel like there's nothing you can do, you don't make any difference. And we really push back against that argument, actually. Our sort of somewhat simplistic view is that it was billions of small actions that created the climate crisis in the first place. And so by the same logic, billions of small actions can help get us out of it. And actually, there's some research that shows that over 60% of all greenhouse gas emissions are generated as a direct result of the consumption decisions that we make in our homes. And so that means that we are enormously empowered in the decisions that we make. And if you just take food waste, there's something called Project Drawdown, which Stack ranks the top 100 solutions to the climate crisis. And in position number one is reducing food waste. And that comes above electric cars, above solar power, and above a plant-based diet. And in a country like such as the UK, half of all food waste takes place in the home. So yes, what we do has a massive, massive impact. And it can be really simple. Just by giving food away instead of throwing it away, you can sort of start to be that sort of catalyst of change. I think the other thing that we believe is that individual action, whilst when you kind of look at it on a micro level, it can feel like what difference is it really making? Every time you move your money, you are sending data up to the large corporates and up to the businesses, which they scrutinize ever so closely. And when they see money moving away from kind of unsustainable products, products that are destructive to the planet, and towards more sustainable, environmentally friendly products, that is what then gives them the confidence to build out new product lines, to change how they manufacture, distribute, and retail things. You know, my sort of argument is to everybody who can afford to be moving their money, you need to vote with your wallet, because you are the catalyst of change. And ultimately, it's only when businesses make the sustainable choice, the easy choice, and the affordable choice for everybody, that's when real change takes place. So we really do need those kind of early adopters to be taking those individual actions and catalyzing that business change.
That's a really good point. And I guess that's the key to this whole conversation about investing in our planet. We can all invest in our planet through choosing how to spend our money. In our campaign, we relate this to airline tickets. So if we keep buying them, we're basically saying we're okay with this industry, but we can choose to invest in the greener option. For example, if we buy a rail ticket, we're saying that we care about the climate and about low carbon travel, and then we're indirectly investing in that industry. So our final question is, if you were in charge as the Chancellor or the Prime Minister, what would your priorities be?
So I would immediately reorient us away from GDP growth being the North Star metric of the economy to a much more well-rounded kind of wellness metric that takes into consideration kind of wellness of people and planet. So that would be the first thing, because I really do believe that kind of what gets measured gets done. Another thing that I would do would, well, other than the obvious stuff like a carbon tax and stuff like that, but another thing that I would do is I would force companies to have to publish their waste data, because at the moment there's just enormous amount of waste taking place at every step of the supply chain. And we've seen occasionally it comes into the news, right, where just products are being burned and landfilled at scale. And I think that if they say that sort of sunlight is the best form of disinfectant, I think that if you actually had to be very transparent about that, that would immediately help sort of stamp out that behaviour for sure. The other one, I was slipping me and I've remembered it now, that I would absolutely implement as well, would be that as a company, you are legally responsible for everything that you produce through to its end of life. And so that would get rid of all these kind of forced obsolescence issues, right? Because suddenly you're the manufacturer and you've got to get that thing back. So you're going to be interested in repairing it and recycling it and stuff like that. So yeah, I think, and similarly, that would help tackle the packaging problem as well. You know, at the moment, there is no penalty for Coke or McDonald's or people like that to be creating all of this single-use packaging, because they're not considered responsible for it right now. But if they were legally responsible for that, again, I think that would just completely reinvent our whole economy.
If only you were in charge, Tessa. Thank you so much again for joining us. I especially liked what you said about billions of small actions creating the climate crisis, and therefore billions of small actions helping get us out of it. If you want to find out more about Tessa and Olio, you can find everything you need to know at oliox.com. Now we're going to hear from our next guest for this episode, May Alcarini. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today, May. I'd love to begin by asking if you could explain to us what Globe Chain is all about and what inspired you to launch this business.
Yeah, so I'm May. I'm the founder of Globechain. We are what we call an ESG reuse marketplace. So imagine it's like eBay, but rather than selling products, we give them away for free and we generate ESG data on the impact of where items go. So we basically help companies reduce waste. So rather than disposing of products or items or materials, they list them on our marketplace and we redistribute them to our network of charities, SMEs and individuals, and on the back of that we generate environment social governance data.
And before you started the company, did you already have an interest in the environment?
Yeah, so I was always I always actually loved nature and like seeing places a little bit untouched, you know, by kind of humankind. So I always had that kind of affinity, and I was one of the generation that grew up with recycling really as something that you had to do in the home. So we were taught to recycle our paper, cardboard, and so on. But my background actually was investment banking, and it started really when I was in a bank and they moved offices across the road and they disposed of the furniture, and I just thought, why have you not being able to give it away? There are people who need it. It was such a waste. We kept the buildings. We literally, you could see the building across from the other building. And I was really shocked. And I just thought, why is no one digitalized waste and connected these people together? And of course, you know, the banking world and the finance world at that time, there's no such thing as like sustainability. So I really thought, well, this is something that you could do without actually feeling guilty, because I don't know if anybody remembered in the past, you might feel a bit guilty for not doing your recycling and so on. So this was a way of me kind of like giving back in that way, but also kind of commercializing it. And we have a strap line. It's almost like commercial with a conscience, because I really believed businesses of the future would not necessarily have a charity arm. I think it would be more ingrained within the foundations of the business, and actually helping the environment was just the byproduct of what you did, what would be classed as like business for usual. So that was kind of my motivation for it, and probably a little bit of naivety and craziness in setting it up, because I didn't realize like how big it would actually end up being.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how much your company has grown. For those listening who haven't heard of the concept of the circular economy, could you explain what it is and why you think it is so important?
Yeah, I mean, it's really complex, the circular economy, but in really simple terms, if you think of how businesses exist at the moment, it's called a linear process. So, you know, it, like a product or material might be mined, it might be the logistics sent somewhere, then it produces a product, that product then goes through a manufacturing or packaging or whatever, and then finally it goes to a consumer or a shop, you sell it, and then when they're done, it's disposed of. That's linear, it's a straight line. Circular is involving the different aspects, if you like, of the life cycle of a process, a product, a service. And at each life cycle, you have to think more sustainable about how basically you approach each area. So for example, can you use materials already around rather than mining it, you know, do urban mining? Can you design a product that's modular for buildings that you can dismantle and reuse elsewhere? And if you have what's considered as waste from cutoffs or whatever, can you actually recycle it or create a new product out of it and use it within your processes? So eventually that becomes like a circle, right? Everything is brought in-house. Businesses aren't equipped to do that completely yet if they've been around for many years, but they're definitely changing. It requires a lot of like intel, knowledge, working, trial and error to get there. And basically that's this new economy that we see at the moment. And, you know, a couple of years ago, McKinsey Pricewaterhouse did a study and they said that the circular economy could be worth over, it's probably more now, about 4.3 trillion.
Is this concept taken more seriously now compared to when you first started your business?
Absolutely. You may not think it's circular economy, but you're seeing it. And what's been nice the last few years is you've seen a real shift in well-being, ethics, values, driven by consumers, you know, Gen Z, millennials. This new generation has the spending power, but also they care more about society. You know, it's not as consumerism, you know, as so much. It's more about experiences and lifestyle choices. So that has been quite intrinsic in driving it to become mainstream. You know, you're seeing, you know, vegan, you're seeing, you know, the fair trade, the ethics, the secondary market for clothing. You're seeing it in the shops now a lot more, and that's been driven by, you know, people.
For businesses who are looking into developing their own sustainability plan, what advice do you have for them?
I think what we've saw in the past was a lot of companies trying to do everything all at the same time in-house, like the complexities of it. And then they spend like a year or two trying to work it all out and put their strategy in place. And then they realize it's such a big job, they can't do it all themselves. So I think I would break it down into where they probably produce the most carbon or where there's a big issue. So if they're a product company, is their packaging sustainable? Can they eliminate single-use plastics? You know, obviously that's the obvious one. Whereas like if it's a retailer, you know, where in their business are they spending a lot of money on waste or things have been wasted? So it's kind of breaking down that and then going and finding solutions that you can implement quite quickly that can help you and then build on that and maybe bring things in-house, right? So I think it's a classic we saw in the past of people thinking they can do everything, and actually all those little niche everythings are massive businesses within themselves. So it's about how can we leverage and support small businesses as well in enabling that transition.
There are still people out there who don't think that making a profit and looking after the planet really go hand in hand. What would your response to those people be?
Yeah, I think people used to say that to us at the beginning, and they used to think we're a charity because it was for free, stuff for free. So it used to really annoy me because I'm like, why do you think we don't earn any money? For me, I basically say to them, well, if you're expecting a free service, how do you think we pay our bills? And do you pay waste companies to dispose of your stuff for free? No, you don't. So why do you expect us? And also there's a you know, they save money through us as well, you know, but it's about understanding the value of what you're getting. You're not just getting like, you know, you're redistributing, you're getting ESG data, which has probably more value than what you're paying people. So luckily we don't get so much of that. There is a few people that maybe push the boundaries a little bit with that, but it doesn't make me angry. You know, you just have to explain like, well, we're a business, and that usually kind of stops the conversation, you know, and I'm quite strict with that. It's like, you know, we don't do things for free because we don't need to prove ourselves anymore. So there has been an element of like confidence with businesses. It's like, we're proud of our product. We know what we're doing. We're the best in the market, and this is what value you're getting for it. So if you think you can get it somewhere else, feel free to go. But, you know, like you've got to try it before making assumptions.
Your mission is to divert 100 million tons of waste from landfill by 2025, which is amazing. Do you feel that the way we think about reusing items has changed or is in the process of changing?
Yes, I think definitely. Like even... obviously now everything I look at, if I see something on the road or whatever, I'm like, oh, could someone have taken that? You know, if there was something, if they knew about us or if they could do this with it. I genuinely think I'm quite optimistic. I do think people, they are really changing. They do really care. As you said, there's not that perception anymore. It's like a secondhand good, right? It's looked at as like being more responsible, and you save money as well. There are motivations for you to begin. And there's something quite satisfying in finding something like that, you know, like I've got no issue with people buying new as well, but I think people are buying more better quality things, which is great. And I think if you're buying, buy better quality if you can buy the quality you can afford, right? It's very difficult when you're younger, I know, you know, you're not on a lot of money, and the fast fashion and all these things, you know, they're convenient, but also you've got people, you know, like trying to pay their bills, feed their children. So I understand not everybody could do that, but I think if we all do like one thing that we can afford to do within our budget, it goes a long way. But also I think ask the questions and challenge people. So, you know, when you do go in a cafe or you see a business and it started out, you know, like ask them like, is that recycled? Is that sustainable? Is that fair trade? Is that ethical? Is it organic? Is it vegan? So, you know, that way, by you asking a question, and then if they hear that question over again from different people, they're going to take note and go, this is important. I'm going to change my business to see if I can find a solution for this. Because one thing I hate is these food delivery services, you know, that give you packaged food to the home. It's convenient, great. But a lot of them aren't sustainable. They come in like plastic packaging, you know, and just like, why did you not, who didn't put them under pressure when they're heavily funded? to put them in better packaging, do you know, modular packaging. You can return it if it's a subscription model. There are ways around it. And, you know, some of these companies are, you know, they've got funding of like 100 million, 200 million. Like, you can afford it. You know, there's no excuse. So that's my little bit of a bugbear when I see that.
We totally agree that this is a really powerful way to make an impact. We're seeing it a bit with the airline industry, where airlines are promising more sustainable practices in order to attract more eco-minded customers, although of course it's all greenwash. But it's also happening with rail companies across Europe, who are putting on more routes and more night trains and providing cheaper fares because they can see that people care about keeping their emissions down when it comes to travel. So as well as cutting down on waste, what are other ways that individuals and businesses can invest in our planet?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've got a little biodiversity. I think it's, you know, a shame not to like look after kind of like, you know, just nature in general, especially if you live in a city. You know, I mean, I'm not from London originally. So whenever I go back home to the north of England, I'm, you know, it's like, I just think, oh, how lush and green it is, you know, because I forget there's a different type of greenness in the south to the north, you know. And I just think, just appreciate things, you know. I hate people like, don't, you know, don't throw your litter around. I mean, like, who throws litter these days? You know, leave it with you, keep it in your car, keep it in your bag, you know, unless it's obviously like liquid or something. But you know, I just think people need to like appreciate what they have around them a little bit more and become more grounded in that sense. So I think there's that element on the planet. It's a difficult one because kind of we create the waste and we create the issues. So it's just probably being more mindful, you know, and you know, I think we've seen from COVID, you know, more community engagement and social impact really helps, and people are much more open to be more philanthropic. So I think people are doing it, you know. It's not just businesses and individuals, but every day of life you can add some kind of quality to it, right? You know, your water supply, your like what you've got in the home, just, you know, eating clean, being healthy, and all that really is about being sustainable. But like you said, I think you just got to do one thing that maybe you have a bit of passion for, because if you have passion for it, becomes easy.
Thank you, May, for taking the time to speak to us. It's been so great to hear from two companies who are both trying to reduce the number of things we send to landfill and reduce the amount of waste we produce. And both raise some really important points about how our consumer choices really do make a difference when it comes to protecting our planet. And as we said at the very beginning with our flight free fact, we can protect our economy and people's jobs at the same time as protecting our planet. Thanks again to Tessa and May for joining us this month. It was wonderful to hear from them both. Just to remind you, Tessa is at oleox.com and you will find May at @globechain on Instagram. So now it's time for Destination of the Month.
Destination of the Month.
On the theme of Earth Day, we've picked an art installation called Gaia. It's a 7-meter-wide sculpture of the Earth, which will be displayed in various indoor and outdoor locations throughout the UK in the coming months. The person who created the artwork has said that he wants to create a feeling of awe for the planet and a renewed sense of responsibility for taking care of the environment, similar to what astronauts feel when looking down at the Earth from space. He says, "We urgently need to wake up and change our behaviour. We need to quickly make the changes necessary to prevent runaway climate change. I hope visitors to Gaia get to see the Earth as if from space, an incredibly beautiful and precious place, an ecosystem we need to look after and our only home." Gaia will be in Lincoln till the 29th of May, Lichfield from the 8th of May to the 5th of June, Rochester Cathedral from the 24th of May to the 12th of June, Oxford Festival of the Arts between the 24th of June and the 10th of July, Lancaster Priory from the 25th of June to the 17th of July, Jodrell Bank Observatory from the 21st to the 24th of July, and Greenbelt Festival from the 26th to the 29th of August. You can find out all the details at my-earth.org/tour-dates. And that's it for this month's episode. Thank you again to Tessa and May for joining us and sharing their insights. If you're inspired to make 2022 your year of being flight free, you can sign up at our website, flightfree.co.uk. You can head to earthday.org to find information on Earth Day events, activities, and what individuals and organizations can do to make a difference. Next month, we'll be talking about aviation and wildlife, so please do join us again then. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed your journey with the Flight Free podcast. Download the full series on the podcast page of our website and join us again next month for more inspirational stories and grounded adventures. You can find out more information and inspiration at flightfree.co.uk. Until next time, stay safe and stay grounded.